You're listening to Social 545, where we discuss what's trending in social media and interview weekly guests. Now, here are your hosts, Saba Siddiqui and Carlos Gill.
Hey guys, welcome to Social 545. My name is Saba. I am one of your co-hosts, and we are joined tonight by Brandon Harvey, an Instagram influencer, a storyteller, a photographer, and a Snapchat influencer. Welcome, Brandon.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
We're excited to have you.
Welcome to Social 545, Brandon. We're really excited to talk with you tonight here about Snapchat, which is become a favorite social network for not only Saba and I, but we talk a lot about it here on the show and on a lot of our episodes. You know, we get a lot of questions from the audience around how influencers work with brands. I know we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk a lot about the Snapchat updates. And before we get started, I just want to say what's up to our audience watching us here on Blab. And hello to those of you that are listening to the podcast on iTunes. We took a week off the Thanksgiving break, but we're back here with all of you guys here in Social 545 and just really excited to have Brandon joining us here today. So welcome to the show, Brandon, and I'll turn it back over to you, Saba.
So I'm super excited. I mean, there's so much that I want to cover, but I want to start off by asking you sort of how you got into this space and sort of like what made you decide that this is the career path you want to take. Let's start with the basics.
Man, well, it didn't start off as a career path. It definitely started off as just kind of a fun hobby. I'm a big fan of storytelling in general. I've been using Instagram to tell stories for years, but a lot of those stories were a little bit more kind of serious stories, or maybe uplifting or thoughtful. But definitely on kind of the more serious side of things. And I started Snapchatting about a year and a half ago, and I was just having a fun time. It was so goofy, but I was just seeing a few friends who I really admired using it to tell unique stories that were just really fun and high energy, and I wanted to start doing that. And so I kind of committed to doing that for a while. I decided I'm going to make a new Snapchat story every single day for a year, and it took me on some really fun adventures. And in the midst of that, it kind of turned into a little bit of a career in some ways.
Yeah, right on. So tell us a little bit, Brandon, about your background, right? So you're a big photography buff. You have over 100,000 followers on Instagram, which is really impressive. So talk to us a little bit about who is Brandon Harvey. You know, talk to us about your background. And, you know, before you got into Snapchat, how long have you been working in or around social media for?
Yeah. So I'm a photographer. I've never quite had a real job. I started shooting professionally when I was 16 years old. Somebody hired me to shoot photos, and honestly, they should not have done that because I was 16 years old and not good yet. So I've sucked for most of those years, but I started young. And I was a big fan of using social media to kind of advertise my own business from the beginning. I was using Flickr. I was using Facebook. That was a while back. But when I got an iPhone, I got my iPhone 4S the day that it came out. Before that, I was on Android, and Instagram wasn't on Android yet. So the very first app that I downloaded was Instagram when I got that iPhone. And I just started kind of playing around with it, trying new things, and things really started to take off. You know, I started building an audience pretty quickly. I just moved from a small town to beautiful Portland, Oregon, and I was just taking photos of this new city that I was living in. And I think that kind of got me really excited to be sharing photos consistently and every day. And Portland is just beautiful. So I lucked out by living in a really beautiful city. But Instagram was a huge part of my life and continues to be a huge part of my life for, you know, maybe the last 4 years or so.
So for those that haven't seen your Instagram, I mean, you take beautiful photos, and I encourage everyone to go check it out. But tell us a little bit about sort of the different content that you post on Instagram and sort of what fueled your fire to kind of transition and create more content on a platform such as Snapchat.
Yeah. Instagram is amazing. As a photographer, living in the Pacific Northwest, a lot of my photos revolved and continue to revolve around, you know, nature, landscapes, beautiful things. But I was also seeing this trend towards, this was years ago, I was just seeing this trend towards people sharing exclusively that. And it kind of made me a little bit bummed that people weren't sharing more pictures of people. You know, you post a picture of somebody and it tends to get less likes. And really, it's not all about the likes, but it is indicative of people's interest. And so I really started pushing towards sharing more portraits and sharing people's stories on Instagram. And so my Instagram definitely took this turn to be a little bit more focused on people and storytelling and you know, the culmination of those two things, people's stories. And so it became a really, really fun place, built a really, really fun community of people who love to tell stories about things that matter in the world. I like to say that the genres that I love to share about are hope, joy, justice, and love. You know, those basic things that move the world forward. That's been the interesting thing about Instagram is those are all kind of huge parts of who I am, but at the same time, it's just a piece of who I am. And so I really enjoyed starting to play with Snapchat more because I also have this very goofy side, super silly. And I've really, really enjoyed having kind of that balance between the two platforms.
You know, Brand, so we're going to get here into Snapchat in just a few minutes, but let's stay on the topic of Instagram. So like you, I'm a big Instagram fan as well. I look at it so different from how we use Twitter or Facebook because I like to call Instagram the Hallmark card of social media. And what I mean by that is everything looks good. Post on Instagram, they really make a very deep emotional connection for the most part. And unlike the other social networks, like Facebook or like Twitter, most people use Instagram, to your point, to tell a story. It's not about talking about how good or bad your day was. It's really about sharing your life through photos. So would you say that it, you know, that's really from your perspective, that a safe analogy, the Hallmark card of social media?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think it's, I think Instagram is a very unique platform. Something really special happens there. You can connect with people in an entirely different way than any platform I've ever seen before. And I think it's because it feels very authentic. People are sharing photos of their life. And although it's curated, you're seeing kind of some of the best of people's lives. It feels personal because it's a photo, it's a moment. And you get to see what's important to people. And I've never been able to connect with people on a different platform in the same way that I connect with people on Instagram.
So we have some questions here coming in from the audience. So let's address the first one. I'm going to put it here on the screen. So what do you, Brandon, do about model releases for people that pose in your photos?
Yeah, great question. I use model releases every once in a while, but normally I build relationships with the people that I'm sharing photos of. I'm not a traditional, like I don't quite do the Humans of New York thing where I'm going and I'm photographing strangers on the street. Mm-hmm. Normally I'm meeting people, building a relationship with them and then sharing a story. Every once in a while, it'll be like a same day interaction, but it's normally I'm having a full on conversation where I get to know somebody, I hear their story. And then I say, hey, do you mind if I share your photo online with my community? And people are always really enthusiastic. I've never had any issues. If somebody were to ask me to take a photo down, I would just do it. It's not a big deal. But if you want to know the logistics of model releases, when I do have to use model releases, there's an amazing app. Oh man, I don't remember what it's called. I can think of it later. Somebody tweet me. There's a great model release app that I use anytime I need it. I never use paper. Anything.
So is that, you know, is that your primary job though? Is it as a photographer and then a part of that is taking photos of others and then you use Instagram as your portfolio? Is that safe to assume?
Well, you know, my job for years has always been that I'm a photographer, but that means a lot of things. Sometimes it's that I share stuff online. Sometimes that it's that I'm shooting for brands. a lot of times right now, actually, a huge focus of my work is I do a lot of storytelling for nonprofits. So I'll travel internationally. I just got back from Israel and Palestine. Before that, I was in Zimbabwe. Before that, I was in Uganda and Rwanda and the Philippines and Hong Kong. And in these places, I'm sharing the stories of the impactful work that nonprofits are doing. And I really enjoy that. So that's a huge part of my work. But you know, then there's all this social media stuff too. So
right.
I've very much begun to juggle a lot of things that I really am passionate about.
That's really awesome that you do so much of the nonprofit work. Another question that we have from the audience is, how do you feel about video on Instagram? And I particularly like this question because although we have this huge shift towards video, of course, we're recording this through video and then syndicating it with audio. Video is a huge thing on Instagram, but you were previously talking about before we went live about how important it is to be consistent with your content. And so what are your thoughts about video?
Yeah, that's a great question. I love video. I definitely would never advocate for getting rid of video from Instagram. I'm super glad that it's there, but I'm still, you know, I'm using it once in a blue moon. I'm using it only when I have content that really fits what I already am sharing that's in video format. So every once in a while that happens. For the most part though, I'm not going out and creating video, but there are a few accounts that I love that are almost exclusively video accounts. And I love the consistency of them just of me knowing I'm going to see their videos when I go on Instagram. So, yeah, I'm glad it's there.
Cool. Awesome. This is a great question because I think all of us that create content, I know I'm a huge foodie. So I'm constantly at a restaurant. I'm figuring out the right angle, the lighting. And so Mallory asked, how do you take pictures in public without looking like a D-bag?
Yeah. That's the best question. Number one, I would say, don't worry if people think you're a D-bag because you don't really need to be worried about what people are thinking of you, especially if you're going into things with intentionality. If I see a photo I want to take somewhere outside, I just take it. You know, I don't really worry about what people think. And that maybe means that I get photos that other people don't get if they're nervous, if they're shy, if they're worried about what people are thinking. I'm not taking photos that are malicious or mean. I'm not taking photos of strangers without their consent. I'm normally taking a picture of, you know, like I'll be in the middle of the road taking a photo of something that I see. And it's maybe embarrassing that I'm in the middle of the road doing whatever, but I'm not like encroaching on somebody's personal space. So I don't want to be a D-bag in the way that I'm affecting somebody's life, but I don't mind if people think that I'm a little bit ridiculous. I prefer that.
Well, and it's such a legit question. And I think we're all totally guilty of that. I know I'm guilty of it. You know, walking around, I'll take a selfie, you know, share it on Snapchat and my different social networks. And it's funny because over the Thanksgiving break, one of my relatives actually took a photo of me using the Snapchat filters and was like, this is how ridiculous amazing. You look doing this, especially in public. And it was almost like a reality check of like, wow, that is, you know, that's actually pretty funny. You know, when you take yourself out of the picture and you see how you're perceived by others. So I think it's a great question. Saba, like you, I'll be at a restaurant with others and pull out my phone and do this and, you know, take a photo. And, you know, you and I have hung out. So I know, you know, you're very guilty of doing that as well, Saba. You've got the perfect angle. You've got the lighting that has to be right. All the while people around you are like, come on, is this guy or is this girl going to eat their meal?
Yeah, that's definitely me. But I think that's sort of, we've begun to sort of accept this behavior of everything needs to be pictured. Everything needs to be captured. I mean, although all my friends make fun of me and they say, Saba, you take pictures of everything. Saba, you Snapchat everything. At the end of the day, when we go home, they're the ones that are calling me and asking for all those pictures. Right. So,
you know, Brandon, so before we transition into Snapchat, I have to ask you because you have, yeah, that's actually a picture that Saba is showing on the screen of sushi. When we hung out in LA a couple of weeks ago, we were having sushi and Sasha, I hate to throw you out there like that, but we're having sushi. I swear you must have spent about 15 minutes taking a picture before you even took a bite. But hey, that's what makes us human, right?
No regrets.
You can't fault anyone for that.
Picture or it didn't happen.
But Brandon, I've got this question for you. So, and I know others out there either listening on iTunes or watching this here on Blab are probably wondering, how do you grow and scale your Snapchat, your Instagram following. So you have over 100,000 followers on Instagram, which is really impressive. Come on, give us some tips. Is it using hashtags? Is it just purely in the content? What is it?
Yeah. Well, addressing hashtags, I think that's something, and I can only speak to my space of Instagram where I'm mostly sharing within the photography community. So it may be a little bit different within certain other communities. Instagram has lots of little communities. But within my community, I found that a lot of people really think hashtags do stuff, but in all reality, they don't have much of an impact. If you kind of think about a lot of the popular hashtags that people use, hashtag Instagood, a hashtag, all these like random specific things, you have to kind of ask yourself, when was the last time that I went through that specific hashtag, scrolled through some photos, found some people that I admire, hit the follow button on them? That for me, that doesn't happen. I never go through those random hashtags and look for people and decide to commit to following somebody. And so what you really get is you just get a bump of a few people going through, they're liking a few photos in the hopes that you'll go check out their profile and add you back. So you're not getting long-term followers when you do these hashtags. You're not building relationships. And that's for kind of more general hashtags. That's for things like hashtag Instagood, hashtag summer, hashtag girl, things like that, that are just general. But hashtags can be really beneficial for really specific things. Here in Nashville, there is delicious food. And I know that there's an interesting food culture, like we were talking about earlier, Saba, of people, taking photos of their meals and then they'll share it on Instagram. But you go to an amazing restaurant, you share about it and you do like hashtag Nashville food. And all of a sudden you've got a community of people who are like, man, I want to follow other people who are posting about food in Nashville. I want to follow people who live in this city. And so you can actually gain real followers. So I would say if you're going to be hashtagging, focus on specifics, focus on things that you would actually be interested in yourself. Besides that, I think a great way to kind of grow an audience is just to build relationships with people, figure out cool ways to do things together. I know in the early days, and this happened on accident, I wasn't really being intentional about this, but it just happened. I had just moved to this new city. I was looking for creative photographer friends. And so I just started meeting other people on Instagram. A lot of them had a little bit of a following and I could just reach out and say like, hey, you want to go on a hike? You want to go shoot photos together? And I'd shoot photos of them. They'd shoot photos of me. And when they'd tag me, their followers would be like, oh, here's another photographer. I'm going to go follow them. And I hadn't even processed through it, but now I realize, oh, like that's a totally viable strategy, for gaining an audience. So there's that too. And then we were talking about it earlier. I think just being consistent in the stuff that you're posting is one of the most valuable things you can do. Share photos that are so consistent that if somebody shows up on your profile and just looks at your grid, doesn't click on your photos, doesn't spend more than 2 seconds on your profile, they could be like, oh, I get what this person's about. I understand what they're doing. I think that kind of consistency is great. And then people will stick around because they followed for a reason. They wanted to see a certain kind of content. And if you keep on delivering that content and adding value to people's lives, they're going to be psyched. They're going to stick around. They're going to tell their friends. And I think those are the three core things that I keep on thinking about.
Yeah. It's interesting that you kind of mentioned the fact of collaborating offline, because I think so many people become so focused on these online communities. And although you're building your community online and you might not live in the same place geographically as a lot of these people that may be following and connecting with you, there are a specific group that are near you enough where you can actually go and collaborate. And I've heard that from other people who have grown large Instagram followings of you really have to make the effort to meet people in that community. I know there's like Insta meetups with different photography groups, and those are actually really effective because you're actually cross promoting each other's work and growing things together. And so I think the kind of push to offline networking and collaboration is so important in the online world.
Totally. I completely agree. And I think that's what keeps a sense of authenticity in things. When you're spending time with people, you really, it's hard to be manipulative. It's hard to be sleazy because you're looking somebody in the eye. And so you actually get a really authentic collaboration where it's mutually beneficial, and people can see right through that type of thing. So, yeah, I think the more authentic, the better.
You know, so I have to be completely transparent. You had mentioned before that Instagram is great for relationship building. Mm-hmm. And in the context, and again, you know, it's worked for you. You've scaled your audience, obviously, to over 100K, which is very impressive. But my just speaking for myself, the way I use Instagram is more of passive engagement. Mm-hmm. So if I see content that I like, I'll favorite it. Very rarely do I find myself commenting. Very rarely do I find myself really even engaging within the comments on my photo. Which is, you know, for me personally, uncharacteristic, because LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, even Snapchat has become, you know, my go-tos for constant engagement. So it's interesting, you know, looking from your perspective that you actually find Instagram useful for relationship building.
Yeah. And processing through that right now, I think one reason that that might be true is that I'm a photographer. A lot of my community are people who are visual people, they're aesthetic people. And so it's easy for me to find my community on Instagram, because I can find other photographers. I can find people who are passionate about travel or hiking, you know, because those are things that are naturally shared on a platform like Instagram. Whereas you are maybe on more of the strategy side of things, or more on the side of social things. And so maybe it makes sense that you would connect better on a platform like Twitter, which is just like social media at its core, or LinkedIn, which is, you know, on the professional social side of things. And those are the places I know I first connected with you. And I don't know if I've even seen your Instagram, and it's on Instagram, I guess mostly I really am connecting with photographers. So I guess that's a good point that if you're looking to connect with people, if you're looking to kind of grow a platform, figure out what's most natural for the type of content that you produce. You know, I think that's a great place to start. For me as a photographer, as somebody who's very visual, Instagram was a great place for me to start. And now I'm moving to Snapchat, which is maybe just an evolution on Instagram, because it, again, is so visual and it's very storytelling focused, which is another passion of mine.
Right. So it's interesting, because even though like you've created so much perfect, well kind of maintained, manicured content on Instagram, you decided that the next focus for your social platform is going to be Snapchat, which is almost like the complete opposite. Although it's totally not messy, it's extremely creative. You can kind of play around with it. And so tell us exactly when you decided to kind of make that transitional focus, and then sort of how you decided to grow your current Snapchat community. And tell us again, how many people watch your Snapchat story?
Yeah, man. Snapchat is so different than Instagram. It's almost the polar opposite. And I think that's what I like so much about it. Instagram for me is very curated, very selective. And I feel like that was really limiting a large part of who I am. You know, I want to share all these other aspects of my life. And so I kind of jumped on Snapchat when I figured out that you could tell stories, that you could use the story section of the app to share stories with people and kind of be a little bit goofy. You don't have to produce it as much. Things just come out and they are what they are. And so I think I had a pivot moment. I was a few months into kind of working hard on Snapchat, but I actually was at an airport. Do you guys know who Sean Durez is?
Yeah.
So Sean Durez is
loving snaps.
Yeah, he's fantastic. He's arguably the biggest person on Snapchat, the biggest homegrown celebrity on Snapchat. So he's got tons of followers. He's a fantastic artist on Snapchat. He does great drawings all over things. And I'd really admired him for a long time in the way that he shares his adventures online and tells stories through social media. And we'd actually talked on Instagram before. We were kind of buddies on Instagram. And I was at an airport and I saw his iconic long curly skateboarder hair. This is in the Seattle airport. And neither of us lived in Seattle. And I went up and I kind of pulled a little bit of a prank on him because I recognized him. And I got the whole thing on Snapchat. And from that moment forward, we kind of became friends. And so it was great. I could ask him questions on things when I was curious about things. We kind of talked through various things about Snapchat, and it kind of just kickstarted me into this world of using Snapchat in a more professional way. And so fast forward a year later, and I have, maybe upwards of 100,000 followers, but regularly getting between 40 and 50,000 views per snap. So if you multiply that out across, a 20 snap story, I do not want to do that math in front of an audience, but, it correlates to a big number, which I'm super honored by and excited about.
So with all of those impressions, I mean, if you total it up, like consecutively, that's over maybe 200, 300,000 impressions, maybe in 24 hours. And so once
and that's the math that I didn't want to do. So thank you.
I just quickly did it. I might be wrong. But so with all of those impressions, right? So there's like this pressure to create the story, to keep the person entertained. When did you decide, okay, I want to make that shift in terms of working with brands, or did the brands just come to you, and how did they find you? Because I know a lot of people say the discoverability for Snapchatters is so difficult. You don't have followers. There's no hashtags. I mean, how do you promote yourself outside of the platform?
Yeah, the discoverability is the most difficult part of Snapchat. But that's also what gives anybody who can gain an audience a competitive advantage on the platform. Any brand who can build an audience, any social influencer who can build an audience on Snapchat is ahead of the game, because it's very difficult to do so overnight. And so I kind of grew mine slowly over time in kind of a similar way to what I was talking about with Instagram. I consistently created content every day so that people knew to check back. You know, my goal would be for people to build a routine around the stories that I create. So like every night before they go to bed, they'll watch my story, or every day on the bus to school, they'll watch my story, something like that. That's just consistent. And so my goal was consistency, and I wanted it to be high quality every time. And then I would just like make stories with other Snapchatters. You know, I travel a lot for the work that I do. And so I'll be in New York and I'll meet up with a Snapchatter there, or I'll be in LA and I'll meet up with a Snapchatter there. I've met up with Snapchatters in way too many states. Like I one time drove through the night to meet up with a Snapchatter in Seattle. I was living in Portland. No, he was somewhere else. I don't remember where he was. But drove a long time to get there, and it was a blast. It's just like fun, and it creates a fun experience, creates a fun story that people can engage with. But the brands just kind of came, naturally. People start to talk about you, when you create good content. And because Snapchat's so small, it's easier to kind of rise to the top in some ways. And I hope that comes out sounding all right. But I was just creating a lot of consistent content, and so people would talk about it. And that's the interesting thing is, for people to talk about things on Snapchat, you have to talk about it somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's really valuable on Instagram. If I like somebody's Instagram photos, I'll just like share it on Instagram in whatever way possible. Same with Twitter. But when you're on Snapchat and you have great content, people will screenshot what you're doing. Mm-hmm. They'll go find your videos that you uploaded somewhere, and they'll share it on Twitter. They'll share it on Facebook. They'll share it on Instagram. So things can go viral a lot faster, because that's the only way to show somebody what you're seeing.
Yeah. You know, I completely agree with that. And, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about how you work with brands and so forth, but let's stick on this for a moment, because what I've discovered just in my usage of Snapchat, I've been on there for about a year as well. And just to provide some context, for me, Snapchat initially became my escape, if you will, my release from everyday social media. Because to your point, you mentioned the word goofy before. That's where I could go. And I'm not talking about social media. I'm not talking about what I do for a living. I'm being myself. And I think we all need that, right? We all need that escape from Facebook or LinkedIn or Twitter. We just need to be ourselves. And, you know, again, to your point, Snapchat's a great storytelling app. But what I've noticed over time is it's probably of all the social networks out there, the most loyal community. And what I mean by that, and granted, I don't have anywhere near the reach or following that you do, but what I've noticed is when I put snaps out there, at least a quarter, a fourth of my followers in my network view my content. Mm-hmm. And when I ask them to take action, at least another fourth actually take action and engage. So just from a pure engagement standpoint, when you take into account following that we have on any one of these platforms, like Twitter, for example, Twitter's not as engaged as an audience. Mm-hmm. Why? Because there's just that stream of content that's constantly flowing. So again, to your point, I was really impressed. You say 40 to 50,000 people view each snap. I would almost debate if most brands out there get 40 to 50,000 people to view a tweet throughout the course mm-hmm. of the day. So let's talk about why is Snapchat special from your point of view? What makes Snapchat unique from the other platforms out there? And from your perspective, what makes it a special platform?
At its core, I think that Snapchat is so intimate. I think it's the most intimate social platform. You know, what you're doing when you're watching my snaps is you're seeing from an arm length away, you're seeing me in my house, you're seeing me in my car, you're seeing me in my neighborhood. And people will send me replies back and I'm seeing somebody in their bathroom taking a selfie. I'm seeing somebody in their kitchen. You know, that is really intimate. You can never be more than an arm's length away from somebody. And it's, you know, it's in selfie mode and it's not that people dress up for Snapchat. It's not that people put on their A game for Snapchat. They're just documenting their lives. And so you see people in real raw moments and it's very non-curated. You know, I think people, because things expire in 24 hours, you're willing to put yourself out there a little bit more because you're not risking your reputation. You're not, it's not as much of a long-term thing. And so I think it's just very authentic. It's a very authentic platform. It's hard to fake things. It's hard to be not yourself.
I will say this, though. The pendulum is starting to swing from being very much a personal and private social network to at least speaking for the social media community, a lot of us that work in marketing for brands, a lot of us that are already connected through the LinkedIn and Facebooks and Instagrams and Twitters of the world are now starting to gravitate over to Snapchat, which is almost starting to create a little bit of censorship, I will say. Do you find that happening on your end?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely know that for me, I curate a little bit more on Snapchat than I did at the beginning. And for some of that's intentional, some of that's unintentional. For me, I just tell one story every day. I never tell more than that. I just tell one story a day. And so if I have, so I really just focus on, at the beginning of the day, I'll be like, what's the thing that's going to happen today that I want to share about? Mm-hmm. And normally it's something from my life. Sometimes I'll go intentionally create a story. But so because I'm just choosing one thing, it really does affect my stories. I'm not doing the standard traditional thing of documenting my whole day like a lot of people do. And that's strategic. So there is more curation, but at the same time, like I think that for me, Snapchat is still my most authentic platform. It's the platform where I think I'm the most real. I'm like, you see my double chins, you see my, like, you see like my house not made up, you know, you see all these things that on Instagram, you know, I am still not going to really post that. And it's not that I don't want people to see that. It's just that people don't want to see it. And so I'm trying to create content that adds value to people's lives. And on Snapchat, you can add value to people's lives without having a perfect life.
Absolutely. And what people want to see is, you know, they want to see the human element. And, you know, let's face it. A lot of the content that you see today on Facebook, especially, it's almost like manicured content, I call it. And what I mean by that is, a lot of us, myself included, really think through what we say on Facebook because of the perception of how things are going to come out. And Snapchat, again, it's very real. It's in the moment. And you know, that's got to be probably what, for me, has been the biggest game changer is, to your point before, it's almost like vlogging throughout the day, but without having to turn someone onto YouTube. Mm-hmm. It's, if you want to hang out with Brandon, if you want to hang out with Saba or Carlos, all you got to do is just follow us on Snapchat and follow us throughout the course of the day. And you're actually going to see what we're doing in the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's all about that in the moment. And it's interesting you brought up authenticity, Carlos, because everyone is pushing towards that, right? So on Twitter, in their marketing campaigns, right? How can you create the most authentic campaign that's not so edited, right? And so my question to you is what are some of the ways that brands can leverage an influencer as yourself and have leveraged, right? Because there's multiple ways, because although there is channels such as yourself, there's also channels that brands have where they're curating content constantly.
Yeah, Yeah. Should I get into a few of the past campaigns I've done?
I think we're at that time.
Cool. I'll break down my campaigns into a few different things that I've done. I think since we're on the topic of kind of authentic content, one of my favorite campaigns that I ever did was this one that I did for Paramount, the movie studio, when the new Mission Impossible movie was coming out. And so a lot of their messaging on kind of along the same lines of authenticity, a lot of their messaging when that film was coming out revolved around Tom Cruise doing all of his own stunts. If you saw any of the commercials when Mission Impossible was coming out, it was that they would show a clip of the movie and say, hey, like Tom Cruise didn't have a stunt double and he actually did this thing. And it's him like hanging off of an airplane or him like jumping in this like car, like all these ridiculous things where I'm like, that's crazy. And so that was their messaging. They wanted to be like, this is an authentic thing. And so they basically just asked me to share about that in whatever way I felt best. And so my Snapchat story just started off with me saying, you guys, I just found out that Tom Cruise does all of his own stunts in the new Mission Impossible. So today I'm going to do all of my own stunts. And I just ran around town doing all of my own stunts. And I'm just like a dude who doesn't have any skills in physical abilities. And so I was like jumping over rocks and like running over park benches and Snapchatting the whole thing. And it's back to that old conversation of looking ridiculous when you're outside doing stuff. And I looked really ridiculous, but it was so fun and it was just a great time. And at the end, I asked my Snapchat followers, like, send me some of your stunts. And I got to see my Snapchat followers doing the same kind of goofy stunts. And hundreds of people sent me videos of them jumping off of bunk beds or jumping on the trampoline outside or rolling through their hallways, you know, just goofy, silly stuff. It was a total blast. So I really enjoyed that campaign. And all that Paramount really wanted was that people would have a good, positive experience associated with the movie. And I really hope that's something that my audience experienced.
So was there kind of like an army of Snapchat influencers that they decided to kind of recruit to bring brand awareness or awareness to the movie? Or was it just sort of you creating it and you had enough reach for them? How do these campaigns usually work? Are you guys teaming up? Is it kind of individual ones hitting different audiences across the country? How do you kind of go about that relationship with the brand?
Yeah, it can totally depend on the experience of what a brand wants. In this situation, I think they were focused on reach, but they did reach out to kind of specific people for specific reasons. So because it was such a loose assignment, it was I could kind of do whatever I wanted. So that's the route that I took. And if you saw any other influencers' stories, you actually saw a totally different story. It wasn't another influencer doing their own stunts. It was them talking about something they liked about the movie, or it would be them pretending to flirt with a Tom Cruise cardboard cutout, you know, things like that, that are just, it can be wildly different. And so I think that was a really valuable thing to not have everybody doing the same cookie cutter thing. But that one was definitely focused on reach. There are other times where a brand will say, Brandon, this fits you perfectly. Let's do this exact campaign with you and only you. And I'm always really honored by that. And those are my favorite brands to work with, not because I need exclusivity, but because they're paying attention to the type of content that I already like to create. And they're approaching me with an opportunity along those lines. Because if I'm already creating something consistently, then that means my audience likes it and it adds value to their lives. And the best thing that a brand can do is add value to the lives of my existing audience.
So Brandon, walk us through the process of working with brands. I know this is such a hot topic for influencers and even aspiring influencers that want to get into the space. They're out there creating content on Snapchat, YouTube, the various networks. So walk us through, how do brands go about finding you? And is it the brand that you're working with, or is it the brand's agency that's working with you on these campaigns?
Yeah, it's, I mean, it can be really anything. The thing about Snapchat is it's like totally wild, wild west right now. There's no set precedent for anything. A lot of my work does come through my agency. So I work directly with an agency that makes amazing Snapchat campaigns. They're probably the best in the business, and they're called Narrative. Look them up, Narritiv. And I love working with them. They do a great job of bringing me work that, like I said before, is just like really in line with what I want. So they'll go out and they'll find work for me. But I'm also consistently getting new people reaching out on a pretty regular basis. You know, a few times a week, a brand or an agency will reach out and be like, what do we need to know about working with you? And so usually things are coming through my inbox. Every once in a while, I'll meet somebody in person at an event or something. They're like, let's get something together. On a few rare occasions, I'll be the one actually doing the consulting, running the entire campaign. I really love when I get the opportunity to do that, to pitch a brand on a concept and to kind of run all the way with it and end up executing it as well. That's always really exciting. Because I feel like I really do understand the platform well. And so I love being able to kind of prove that and try new things and take control of the whole process. But a lot of times it's a brand reaching out and they're like, this is what we want. Or it's an agency reaching out to me and a few other people.
So question for you, when you're working with these brands, are these brands that are already established on Snapchat? Or are these brands that primarily don't have a presence on Snapchat but want to work with influencers such as yourself? So like you talked about Mission Impossible, right? So the example would be, you know, leveraging your Snapchat influence to get people to go out and see the movie. Or is it brands that want you to, you know, put product placement in your snaps? How does that transaction work? And what sort of presence do these brands have?
The nice thing about Snapchat is you can have any range of presence and still be able to advertise on Snapchat or to build your brand on Snapchat. I'm working with a brand next weekend that doesn't have a Snapchat account, probably will never have a Snapchat account, but it doesn't matter because I'm going to kind of talk in a really authentic way about their product on my account. And that'll be really, really valuable. At the same time, it's also equally valuable for a brand who has an account or wants to have a presence on Snapchat to reach out and have me help them build that or have me send people over through some sort of takeover or shout out or something like that. So there's really a whole range of things. I like that basically any company can use Snapchat to tell some good stories.
Yeah. So although like as a Snapchat influencer, you obviously see so much value in the content that you're creating. You obviously show a lot of value, which is why the brands are coming back. But there is still a huge part of the market that is not sold on Snapchat, that has doubts about the platform. You know, they don't see that visibility that they want to see. They're all about sort of the storefront, right? They don't see all those fancy followers and that profile picture and those things they need to validate that person and validate those dollars. So kind of what is your argument to brands or to people that say, you know, I still have doubts about Snapchat. I'm not really sure. And have you been in those conversations and what does it kind of look like?
Yeah. I mean, and I think those are all really, really valid. I think a lot of older brands or kind of more classic brands, they really don't need to be on Snapchat if they feel like their other platforms are being really effective. But I think if you want to talk to people who are a little bit younger demographically, or you want to build a brand around authenticity or build a brand around kind of behind the scenes experiences, I think Snapchat's a perfect place to do that. And I think that authenticity is just something that's becoming more and more valued in our culture. Mm-hmm. And so I think long-term every brand should feel authentic. I think that, that the least authentic feeling brands are the brands that you've seen in the news, you know, car companies, oil companies, these brands where you're like, oh, that doesn't feel good. Fast food companies. And I think those brands, in fact, I've had a lot of them reach out to me because they want to work together on Instagram and Snapchat, because those are authentic platforms and they want to appear very real. And mostly I turn those types of brands down because it's inauthentic to fake authenticity. But yeah, I think every brand can benefit from authenticity and using a very genuine platform. And so that's the encouragement that I would give to brands. But I think that a lot of brands just aren't ready for it yet. And I think that they're going to fall behind and they're going to miss out on kind of these early days of Snapchat. But if Snapchat plays out for the long term, like, they'll come around to it at some point. So it's okay for somebody not to be an early adopter, because that leaves more room for the rest of us.
That's true. One thing that I constantly have asked me is sort of like, let's talk about the target audience. And I think there's this this notion and this stigma around Snapchat because of the way it was sort of born and evolved. I've been on Snapchat since 2011, so I've seen it. I was using it in college. It was something that I would have never thought I would be talking about 3 years down the line with someone who's getting paid by brands, right? And I was extremely invested in the platform. So I just want to know a little bit about sort of the audience that you know about on Snapchat, because I think we all assume, yes, the millennials on there, you know, the 14-year-olds are on there, the 18-year-olds, the 25-year-olds, but are the 35-year-olds, the 50-year-olds, is that demographic moved towards Snapchat? And if so, sort of how do you know exactly? You know, like, is there data to prove that?
Yeah. Well, I just want to give a shout out to my grandma, who follows me on Snapchat and she watches my stories when I'm traveling, and anytime that my mom will text her and say Snapchat. And then my grandma knows to go and watch, my Snapchat. So my mom and my grandma both watch my Snapchat. So that's driving, the average age up a few notches. So I think that's great. I can tell you that my audience is largely 14-year-olds, which I really do think I have a younger audience than most. And a lot of that is just the brands that I've worked with and the influencers that I've partnered with. And so it's given me a younger audience. But I also know that I have people like Carlos following me, you know, people who are in the professional like age, people who are working in the digital world. It's certainly not a platform that that people over 40 are necessarily engaging with on a consistent level. I think it really is a platform that skews young and will continue to skew young for a while, but it is not exclusively a platform of teenagers. It's a great place to be to kind of share stories that aren't kid focused. And I think Casey Neistat during his Snapchat days was a huge part in that. He's a vlogger who's just very well respected within the YouTube community, but he started doing Snapchat for about a year, and he brought over a ton of people who would never be Snapchat people if they had just assumed that there were 14-year-olds on the platform. But and I think a lot of those people stuck around, and I think that he's just like an example of one of many people who are kind of older professionals who are creating really incredible content for any age on the platform.
Saba, don't your parents watch your snaps? I have to ask you.
They actually don't, but on Thanksgiving, I came downstairs and my dad, I came and I sat down and he said, "Aren't you going to Snapchat it?" And I was like, "No." And he's like, "Oh, that's weird." So it's almost like he knows my behavior now and he expects it from me. My mom will say, "Don't put me on Snapchat, Saba." My mom will say, "Don't put me on Instagram. Don't tweet about me." So they are so well versed in sort of this lingo and this behavior. And so it's not that weird, but my parents are not on Snapchat yet, thankfully.
Yeah, here in the Gill household, it's actually become a thing. My wife knows when I'm Snapchatting. She'll constantly like put her hand up and be like, you know, don't put me on, you know, on the camera. My daughter loves it. Kids, I think, love the filters. You know, I love the rainbow vomit filter, I gotta say.
Yes. But,
you know, my parents, my mom is actually on Snapchat. She actually got on over Thanksgiving because, again, I'm gravitating there. So it's like any other parent. If they want to follow their kids, right? I'm 32, not 14, but it's like any other social network. You know, parents want to follow their kids. They want to see what they're doing. And even as a 30-year-old man, my mom still likes to see what I'm up to. So she joined Snapchat so she can follow me along. But, you know, one thing that you said, Brandon, that really stood out, I typed it here just so I wouldn't forget, is you talked about the early days of Snapchat. You said we're still in the early days of Snapchat. So Snapchat, it's evolving at a very fast pace. You've got paid geo filters now. You can pay to see replays. You have Discover. You got brands jumping on there. So I got to ask you this from your point of view, where is this headed?
Oh, there is no way to know. If you think about all of the things that that popped up on Snapchat in the last month, it's ridiculous. I never would have guessed that if I hold down on my face while doing selfie mode, I could puke rainbow vomit. Like if somebody had told me that, I would have laughed at them because that's not what I thought Snapchat was. And now you can do things in slow motion and you can do things in reverse. Mm-hmm. Snapchat is beginning to feel more like a toy, but at the same time, they have one of the best news services online. You can watch live events from around the world, people sharing their own videos and perspectives on political races and on sporting events. Like, it's crazy that it can be the goofiest toy in the world and one of the most real news platforms ever. So I have no clue where it's going, and Snapchat could totally change the world with all these risks, or they could totally flop with all these risks. And I'm really excited to find out what happens, but I'm willing to stick with it for quite a while to find out, but it could go anyway.
Yeah, I think some of my favorite stories that are curated are the ones from the different countries, and you see how people are living, what kind of lifestyle they have. I mean, it makes us so much more connected. And it sounds ridiculous for me to say that because, I mean, we have Facebook that's connecting us. We have Twitter that's connecting us. But I think doing it through, like you said, like an arm length away in a selfie mode where you're just creating content as you're walking, you're doing it when you're, you know, sitting at a restaurant or sitting at a concert, and you're just adding all these different creative elements to it. I think it just adds this whole new dynamic that you're not seeing on any other platform, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, it's become one of those tools that makes you just feel connected to what's happening on the world. So, you know, you have the unfortunate tragedy that happened yesterday in San Bernardino. I saw the entire shooting progress through just Snapchat. Mm-hmm. And it's like nuts. You don't even have to turn on and watch, you know, the news networks anymore, because the news network is on your mobile device 24/7. And you can lay in bed and you can see this, or lay on the couch, and you don't actually need to flip on the TV to see what's happening in your world. So transitioning, but still kind of staying on the topic of news. So the Pope was here in the United States. He made his presence. That was an event that was covered all over Snapchat. And I believe you had an involvement in that, Brandon.
Yeah, that was, that's one of the craziest, campaigns that I've been hired to do. I'm not Catholic, but I've come to really, really admire this Pope. I think that he stands for a lot of really, really cool things. A lot of things I was talking about earlier, like hope, justice, peace. I think it's really, really cool to kind of follow along with what he's doing. And so when somebody reached out to me and asked me if I'd like to cover the Pope's visit to the United States, I said, let's do it. Like, let's make this happen. And so the campaign was funded by a large Catholic nonprofit who, they weren't trying to convert people to Catholicism. They weren't trying to get people, to donate money to the church. They were just trying to, kind of talk about this idea that good is winning in the world, and that, that there's hope in even the darkest places. You know, we see all these terrible things in the news, but I like to believe that that there is more hope than there is despair, and that good truly is winning. And so that's what this campaign was about. And it's like, let's use the Pope's visit to the United States to talk about this. And so they brought on this amazing agency called Sports Media Challenge, which is a weird name for an agency that worked with the Pope. But these were the some of the were some of the earliest innovators of social media at this agency. They were the first people to bring Shaquille O'Neal, which is one of the first professional athletes onto Twitter. They got Shaq on Twitter and kind of blew up Twitter in some ways. And so they were brought on for this thing. And so they brought me on for this campaign and they hired me to fly out to New York, DC and Philadelphia and tell the story of the Pope's visit and tell the story of how good is winning in the world through Snapchat and through Instagram and Twitter and photography. So it was a hustle of a weekend doing all of those things at once. But Snapchat was, I think, my favorite platform to tell stories with that whole time. There was so much craziness and I loved sharing the craziness. There was so much, the energy was just unbelievable and you couldn't capture it in any other way than Snapchat. And it was, yeah, it was really fun. And Snapchat even partnered with, the agency we worked with to create a global story. So anywhere in the world, you could have watched a curated story like we were talking about of people's perspectives of the Pope's visit. And I was actually, I had a few snaps make it into that rotation that were curated. And my snaps received, I want to say 27 million views a piece, which is a crazy number, 27 million.
So was that in the Pope feed?
It was in the Pope feed, yes.
Wow. I got excited just when Dreamforce was here in town. I got in the San Francisco feed. It was like 17,000 views, and I was, you know, jumping for joy over that.
That's amazing. That's, wow. I mean, that's still amazing. That's really cool.
Yeah. So with that campaign, because it was kind of large scale, it was like multiple cities, multiple days, were you doing content and promoting it cross-platform? So were you, I know that you had your camera with you, so you're also doing photography. So were you creating content for your Instagram and your Twitter as well as your Snapchat, or exclusively just for Snapchat?
I was creating content on all of these platforms, different content. And I was just, I would wake up at sunrise and then the Pope would kind of get ushered off by Secret Service around sunset. And then I would go back to my Airbnb and I would edit photos and I would write up captions and share stories and just start getting social stuff out there as well as all the social that I was doing that day. So it was maybe the hardest I've ever worked on a campaign, but very, very fulfilling and enjoyable.
So Brandon, I got to ask you, who are some of your favorite Snapchatters out there that you follow?
Goodness.
And Brandon, you can't say it's me.
Okay, if you say so, I'm sorry. You know, one of my favorite Snapchatters has become a good friend of mine through the years, and it's M Platko, M-P-L-A-C, no, A, I don't, M Platko, Google it, you'll find it. I got nervous spelling on the spot. But he's amazing. He's one of my absolute favorites. Another one of my favorites is this girl, Cyrene Q. She's just like a fantastic artist, fantastic person. I loved spending time with her in New York a few months ago. She is amazing. Oh my goodness. I'm trying to think about, you guys know, this is somebody who actually most people don't know about and everybody needs to know about. It's my friend Brad Montague. Brad is the guy, he created Kid President. If you guys seen the videos of Kid President, put on by Soul Pancake. Robbie, who's Kid President himself, is Brad's, little brother. And so Brad, is just like a fantastic filmmaker, very fun, very hopeful. And he creates these amazing Snapchat stories every once in a while. And everybody needs to go find him on there. Brad Montague. Man, he's fantastic. I think he's my favorite Snapchatter. I'm glad that I remembered him.
Brad Montague. I've got to add him.
Yeah, we'll have to add him. What are some of the brands that you think are just crushing it on their channels? And I'm not saying the ones who have the paid ones. I'm talking about if you just follow their handle. I follow a bunch of brands on their handles. Which ones should we be following?
Let me pull mine up. But the first one that I can immediately think of is Apple. Actually, no. It's Beats. Apple Beats is amazing. They have the best cinematography of any Snapchat channel right now. What they do, I mean, and they're shooting everything live in Snapchat.
Is their username just Beats?
Let me pull it up really quick and I can tell you. I want to say, it's actually, it looks like it might be Apple Music is actually what it is. My bad. I think Beats has a separate one, but Apple Music is what I'm talking about. So it's like their username is Apple Music. But they're just, their cinematography is fantastic. They are using Steadicams and drones and all kind and just like jibs on their Snapchats, but they're shooting it all live in Snapchat. They're not uploading it. They're not hacking things. They're just shooting amazing content on the platform, and it looks amazing. And they don't snap every day, but when they do snap, I always make sure to watch it. Let me pull up and see who else I'm loving. I'm scrolling through right now.
And while Brandon goes ahead and looks up these brands, for those of you that are here on Blab watching us, drop your Snapchat username in the comments.
Oh, totally do it.
Yeah, drop it. Brandon will add you. I'll add you. Saba will add you. And you know what? We're going to show you our snap codes. But nice. Brandon, we want you to show us yours as well.
Let's do it.
You have to just take a picture of this and it'll add.
As someone out there could tell a little bird, let's get this in the GIF.
Oh yeah, let's get it in the GIF. Hold on. Let's move it back. Idea. Let's move it back and forth so that it like.
For those of you listening on iTunes right now, we are holding our phones up to our computer screens with our Snapchat codes.
It's actually kind of embarrassing. So if you're on the podcast, you're not missing out. Unless you are, you know, really you might be. Okay, let me pull up another one I thought of is I think Red Bull is crushing it as a brand on Snapchat. I actually got to meet with their social media person when she was in Portland, and she's fantastic. Her team is doing an amazing job. They basically have professional extreme athletes taking over the Snapchat anytime that there's an amazing event happening, and just like creating really, really fun experiences. Love it. I think it's really great. I think Target is really fun. I watch their stories every once in a while when something will pop up, and it's always they've done a really, really good job in the past. One of the first people I ever saw was Taco Bell's. Taco Bell's Snapchat was one of the first I ever saw, and they're fantastic. They're really talented. Oh, and Thrillist. If you guys have ever been to Thrillist.com, it's an amazing site. A lot of it is food focused, food and culture. But I really, really like them. My friend Din Fonte is the guy who runs it, and he does an incredible job. I'm so proud of him and the work that he does. Those are all the ones that I immediately think of.
I have to admit, it sounds like you follow a lot of brands, but you know, I have to admit, I really don't follow more than maybe a handful of brands on Snapchat. And I know I should, but again, the reason why I first gravitated to Snapchat was because if I want to be advertised to by brands, all I have to do is just log on to Facebook. Whereas Snapchat is that escape. It's that release where brands aren't in my face. So, you know, it sounds like you're really connected. So what exactly draws you in for any brand marketers out there listening to this on the fence with whether or not they should put their brand on Snapchat? What exactly draws you in to see a brand's content?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think that difference is key. On Facebook, I know I'm going to be inundated with advertising, and those brands are paying a lot of money to get their advertisements in front of my face. But because they're forced in front of my face, they don't really have to do a great job on the ad because it's going to be effective in getting in front of my face. Snapchat, I have to choose to let something in front of my face. And so if a brand wants to be effective, they've got to create really, really good content. And that's why I'm super willing to go through and watch a million advertisements every day, because these brands are doing an incredible job of creating things that add value to my life. They're really interesting. They're really fun. Honestly, I can't remember the last time I ate at Taco Bell. I can think of maybe freshman year at college. I went through the drive-thru once. But I love Taco Bell because their Snapchats are amazing and they're funny. And I can tell you what their new taco is because I watched their advertisement.
Yep.
And now I'm talking about it right here. So it's effective. You know, Apple Music is crushing it on Snapchat. So I'm super excited to watch their stuff every time it comes on. So I think, you know, there's a lot of brands who, of course, they're going to do a bad job on Snapchat. But the truth is, if a brand wants to be effective on Snapchat, they're going to have to work hard. And I think they're going to have to work harder than any other platform. And that's why I'm willing to follow brands here.
Right. You know, and kudos to the brand marketing team at Taco Bell, you know, at these companies, because the biggest differentiator is they know who their audience is. Mm-hmm. And I can say it because I've heard Taco Bell speak at various conferences over the last couple of years. And before Snapchat, it was Vine, where they were going to drop exclusive content. Now it's become Snapchat. And again, they know that Snapchat, its audience, its demographics over-index amongst millennials. So again, they're speaking to the right audience. And I think that's where brands really need to focus in on is be on the platforms where your audience is engaging. If it's Pinterest, go after them on Pinterest. If it's younger millennials, like you said, you have a lot of 14-year-olds that follow you on Snapchat. So speak to your audience on the platforms where they are engaging the most.
Exactly.
So Brandon, before we jump off, I've got to ask you this question. So how does one go about scaling and growing their audience on Snapchat?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the core thing is, I mean, the baseline, of course, is consistent content. You know, people want to know what they're getting into. But I would say partner with people who have a similar following to you and just scratch each other's backs, not in a manipulative way, not in a weird way, but just find people who you'd be proud to tell your audience about. And if you're creating good content, I think that they'll be proud to share what you're doing with their own audience. And so go have some fun, create some art together, create something special that adds value to people's lives, and promote each other through that. And then, as you kind of grow, you kind of get to do that with brands as well. And you can get paid to do the exact same, type of thing that also promotes your own platform. It doesn't hurt when you get press. I think that comes with, creating content consistently and doing a good job. People will want to write about you. People will want to talk about you. Earlier this year, I very rarely, do anything related to food on my Snapchat, but I had a week where I was doing a lot of snaps about me eating tacos and ice cream on my amazing neighborhood back in Portland. And Food Network decided to write an article that week about the best people to follow for food stuff. And so all of these people followed me because the Food Network wrote an article about how I love to Snapchat about food. So try new things, experiment, and every once in a while you'll get lucky and people will talk about what you're doing. And sometimes the people who talk about you will be a Food Network. I don't know. But I think that's it. And then just be real and be honest. Build real relationships with your audience and build real relationships with other people in the industry. Because I think that's just one of the most valuable things you can do on any platform is to build authentic and real relationships.
Yeah, and that's actually how I was able to connect with you. I remember I read an article about sort of the top kind of Snapchat influencers in the space, what it's like for them to work with brands. And you were actually one of the ones that was highlighted. M. Platko, who you mentioned, that's was fun. Also highlighted. I've been following him ever since. He's and that's great. How I met you and connected with you. And we, you know, kind of chatted over Twitter. And I told you a little bit about Social 545 and how you would be so suitable for this audience and how we could all learn so much from you. So that kind of press definitely helps.
And now we're best friends. That's perfect.
Yes. And now we're best friends. I mean, this has been a great conversation. I know we've gone a little bit over, but we have all learned so much. I think our Blab audience, our iTunes audience, I think they all have so much knowledge that they can learn from you and they can implement and execute. And obviously, it's not going to be the end of Snapchat. There's so much more that's coming, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've got lots more adventures to come. And I'm sure Snapchat's got some really weird updates that they've got planned for us. So that's going to be great.
Yeah, it's going to be good. So if you feel inclined to give Social 545 a shout out, let us know.
Absolutely.
Make sure you snap it. Brandon, thank you so much for joining us today. We want our listeners out there and our viewers here on Blab to know, where can they find you? Not only on Snapchat, but if you have a website, you know, if you have a Twitter account, where can those out there find you?
Yeah, my name is Brandon Harvey. Here's the tricky part. It's spelled B-R-A-N-D-E-N because my mom wanted to name me something unique. So it's great. B-R-A-N-D-E-N-H-A-R-V-E-Y. And my name on everything is just at Brandon Harvey. Snapchat, Instagram, Twitter are some of my favorites. And you can see my photography work at brandonharvey.com. I've shared a lot of my work I've done with clients. I've got some examples of some of my favorite Snapchat stories at brandonharvey.com/Snapchat. And you can even see some Pope stuff if you are interested in seeing my photos of the Pope.
Yeah, I definitely encourage everyone who's enjoyed this conversation to check out his website. You have a lot of other campaigns you've done with Smart Car, with Lyft, with Cliff Bar. And so we just kind of touched on the tip of the iceberg with the time that we had. But it's been a serious pleasure to have you on the show. I mean, we learned a lot. Carlos and I want to thank you for taking the time to do this. And also happy belated birthday, because I know it was
your birthday yesterday. I appreciate it.
All right, we are signing off for Social 545.
That's a wrap.
Thanks so much, you guys.
You've been listening to Social 545. Be sure to tune in weekly to stay in the know of what's trending in social media.